Yep. Give me a nod when you're ready. Junior's ready. Stand by.
Hey everyone, welcome to this episode of Bullets and Bourbon. I'm joined here with my co-host Frank Gao, and we have returning guest Joe Levy. So Joe recently went out and competed at the PCSL Nats, and he not only competed, but he had a strong finish. He came in fourth place in the practical division, and you know, had a commanding performance. I would say this is his first, you know, national level match that he shot in, and just, you know, he did his game plan, good experience. But before I really start talking him up even more, Joe, can you kind of tell us how everything went out there for you?
Yeah, I think the match went pretty well. You know, I was fortunate. I had a good chunk of time to kind of like practice and focus on this match beforehand. Definitely learned a lot about match prep, kind of like preparing for the match, during the match, and kind of how to tackle, like you said, a national level match throughout this experience.
So, you know, before we get into the bulk of the questions, you came in fourth, Sam Nelson came in third, John Treat came in second, all within practical division. Then you had Adam Haswell, who came in 10th place in competition division. Like, I would say the Marine Corps had a pretty strong showing this match.
Yeah, you know? I agree.
Yeah.
I think people noticed that too. You know, like the top people who are, you know, uniformed people are all Marines. I think it just shows that the Marine Corps is kind of focusing on the future of shooting sports and the future of kind of training properly.
Yeah, no, it's kind of exciting, like, to have that strong of a performance and guys just getting in there that are hungry. You know, their heads in the right direction with what they're trying to bring back to the rest of the Marine Corps, and I think that's important.
Yep.
So, what drew you to, you know, PCSL Nationals, and what was the allure for it?
Yeah, so I think like the tagline is that it's the future of shooting sports. You know, and I agree. I think PCSL kind of is the wave of the future. I want to be a part of that and support it. I also kind of use this match for myself as like a forcing function to kind of train some more carbine over the past few months. You know, have like a big, a major thing to, you know, look forward to and train to. It did change venues a few times, so I was lucky I didn't buy flights initially. But I think also just shooting at that facility out of Prairie Fire was just like a side benefit that, you know, made it worthwhile as well.
Yeah, I'll say, watching your Instagram, you put in a lot of work. And like, when you weren't working, you were at the Crucible, and you were like, I see your videos, you're just like, just rushing and training and just like, you know, getting after it. I mean, and, you know, putting your bullseye targets up, and I'll say that's probably about the only thing that's bullseye in your training, but like you're sprinting from position to position, getting down, you know, and keeping everything what within like the 9 ring with the 10 ring for the most part on a B8 target. That's impressive.
Yeah, I don't think I have any off days. I usually don't use a lot of like big steel. Like, I'll shoot like a C zone at like 200 or 300, but I try and keep it like in that tight scoring area of like the black of a B8. So it's like 5.5 inches. And I think that kind of pays dividends when you shoot matches over the course of the day, because you'll have lighting conditions change. And things like look different from, you know, the first guy's running, you know, bay one, the last guy's running bay one. So it just helps a little bit with that visual acuity, being able to like pick a small spot, kind of focus on a small thing instead of like the entire giant PCSL target.
Yeah, no, I agree. One of the things I do whenever I'm training, especially long range, is, you know, I shoot at my neighbor's house, and at 300 yards, we have an 8-inch plate. You know, at, you know, 500 yards, we have like a 10-inch plate. You know, we keep everything relatively small. He shoots more. He doesn't shoot PRS, but he kind of does more bench rest type stuff. He doesn't go anywhere else and shoot. He just, that's what he does to have fun. So whenever I get out there, you know, all I really have for me is small targets. And it's like, okay, let's see how I'm shooting today. And, you know, some days I'm fucking it all up, and other days it's like, okay, I got my long range game. And the fun aspect of it is, you know, I reload all my ammo. So I'm loading 75 grain Hornady, you know, boat tail hollow points. And it's like, let's see how accurate these are. And I was able to shoot out to 700 with them. And I was like, okay, I got a good load.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So Prairie Fire was a host of the match this year. Overall, what was the facility like? How much of the facility was used for the match? And is it somewhere that you'd return to, and why?
Yeah, I'm very impressed with Prairie Fire. It's kind of interesting. You know, you like go down this like road in the desert. You go in through a gate, and it's all like gravel with like those like very familiar kind of buildings. So it's like you're on a base, but you're not, because it's way nicer than any base I've ever been on.
Mm-hmm.
All the bays are awesome. Like they're like big. They're more than deep enough. They had plenty of targetry. They had a great natural terrain area. They had a 200-yard deep range just for us to do like zero and functions check. Like I've never been at a match that had a range like that just for that use. We used their, I mean, it was like a whole massive hall. We used that for check-in, used it for like the final ceremony. They had big, clean bathrooms. They had porta-johns where the bathrooms were too far to walk to. I mean, they really have everything you could ever want in a facility for a major match. And I think over, we had 10 stages. We had some, I think, like vendor area kind of bays being used, and we still didn't use all the ranges there. So like Prairie Fire is pretty impressive. And like, if I was going to run a major match, like I think I would want to do that Prairie Fire.
One thing I heard is everything was polished. Like, from the walls to the stage, that like everything was just clean. Like you go to some matches and, you know, they're used walls, or, you know, everything is a bit worn, but from what I heard, everything was like really just really representative of the facility.
Yeah, I would agree. Like everything was in good repair. Everything was clean. All the Prairie Fire proper employees I thought were really professional, right? More than welcoming. You know, I think this is the first time they ever hosted anything like this, and it didn't seem like that at all. It seemed like they did this all the time.
No, that's awesome. You know, this one is something I, you know, me and some friends talk about all the time, you know, and in the competition world, everything is called a fucking championship, and sometimes it can get quite annoying. You know, you have the Area 6 champion, multi-gun nationals, you have, you know, the Mid-Atlantic 3-gun championship. Everything is known as a championship or a nationals. So, you know, it's so much that, you know, the word championship is saturated, and it honestly means nothing. Did you feel that this match was executed and produced at a professional level of what you would expect from a match of that caliber?
I did. Yeah, overall, I did. I think, you know, when you think about what is a championship, part of it is the level of competition. I think we definitely had some very high-level competitors come to it. And the other half of that is the quality of the stages. And I didn't think that, you know, any of the stages were like lacking. So we had a variety of like very challenging kind of shooting problem set up. So you had one stage that was natural terrain. You're shooting out the 200 meters on steel, like multiple steel engagements. You had one stage where you were shooting at a array with, you know, shoot and no shoot targets at 150 on paper. Mm-hmm. So that meant that every time you shot that stage, someone was driving down in an ATV and pacing it, right? Like that's like pretty national level, I think. You had a swinger that was also a mover, like on a track moving up, right to left. Mm-hmm. I thought that's pretty neat. I don't see that at a local. So yeah, I think, you know, each stage was a stage you probably couldn't have seen done at your local match, save for like the few classifiers that they have, which are meant to be done at your local match.
So, and you kind of, you know, bringing up the classifiers, I don't think classifier type stages should be at a nationals. I understand like USPSA's done it in the past just to kind of get a feel for future classifiers and to kind of build a base of what the average is. But personally, my opinion as a three gunner, I don't think those type of stages should be in a nationals level match just because I'm not here to shoot short stages. I'm here to shoot a diverse set of stages where I'm on the clock for a longer period of time. Do you feel the same way in that regard?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you're off in your assessment there. I do think though that for this match, because they hadn't revealed the classifiers yet or the classification system for PCSL, I think this was a good opportunity just to get some baseline scores going into it so that, you know, when they do reveal their classification system, like, hey, these are like the 10 or 20 classifiers, they already have some like
data.
Yeah. Yeah. I think judging by, you know, the spread as far as like scores from shooters, you probably have a pretty solid demographic to draw some data from.
Nice. No, that's good information to have. You know, we were supposed to have Mike Pannone on here tonight, but unfortunately he got sick. So we're recording without him. So you shot with him, and you've shot with him in the past, but overall, how was that experience? And then how was the atmosphere as a whole on your squad? You know, one of the last episodes we put out, we were talking about like my squad, for instance. You know, it was probably one of the best squads I ever shot with just because everybody got along. It was a great atmosphere. What was the overall atmosphere with the squad that you shot with?
Yeah, I mean, I love Mike Pannone. I mean, I think he and I ran our mouths nonstop the entire day, which is pretty impressive.
Talk shit?
All kinds. But our squad was good. You know, I think five of us or six of us went out to dinner that night, which usually doesn't happen, I think, after a match, right? Like, guys don't just kind of coalesce.
Mm-hmm.
I think just having guys that like really care enough to show up to a match like this and like care to train, care to compete, you're naturally going to like get along together well. And I think we were pretty fortunate with who we had in the squad, like just all good dudes who all shot well. So it was nice. It was a really good environment, I think.
Nice.
Hey, Joe. So I want to talk a little bit about like specifics, the styles of shooting and the way the stages were during the match. So you already talked a little bit about like novel arrays and some of the challenges that they threw at you. But was there, so speaking from a USPSA background, right, which you shoot a lot of, there's general characteristics that we use to define stages. Did you feel like there was a good mix of challenges thrown in there?
I did. And I think that the challenges were also nicely mixed in like within the stage as well. So like I'll take, you know, like stage nine, for example, you know, you start out engaging with rifle at distance, but you still have like eight paper targets for pistol that are pretty close. And you finish with rifle engaging far, quote unquote, like 150 at distance. So I liked seeing that. Right, you kind of like did some rifle stuff with your rifle, but there was plenty of up close fast shooting. There was plenty of movers. There's plenty of steel, and you really had the opportunity to kind of test all those skills within that. You know, a lot of USPSA. I mean, you could show up with like an unzeroed pistol or unzeroed rifle or PCC rather, and like probably do all right. You know,
yeah.
Those targets don't need you to actually have a zero.
Right.
Whereas at this match, you couldn't have done that. You could have survived and like been in the top 70%, but you were going to have a lot of stuff at distance that you didn't hit. So I liked seeing that.
Okay. So what I've noticed about PCSL stage design, and it's still new, right? Like PCSL is realistically not more than a year old. The tendency is to basically have the shooter go to all the positions in the stage twice, once to shoot the rifle targets and once to shoot the pistol targets. Do you feel like they were able to vary that up some? Like, were you given opportunities to, say, for example, shoot on the move? And then how did they do with the layering of rifle-specific and pistol-specific positions?
Yeah, so I think there were definitely a few stages that were like that, right? We had to shoot everything with your rifle in X corner, Y corner, and then transition and then still hit those same corners. But there were a few stages where you had to shoot with your rifle in box one and box two, and then ditch your rifle and you couldn't go back to it. So it kind of forced you to do different things within the stage. I think, you know, like in the super six shoot-off, like the top six guys from each division, everyone kind of shot all the stages the same way.
Mm-hmm.
But throughout the match, you know, like the 10 stages prior, like the main match, you saw a lot of people shoot things a lot of different ways. And there was like a natural flow in most of the stages. So you weren't just shooting the same stage plan twice in a row.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. That was the next question I was going to ask.
Yeah.
Is whether or not it seemed like the stages had options, like enough viable options, not like I'm going to run this really, really dumb stage plan just to be different. Well, but it sounds like you felt like there were enough different options.
Yep, there definitely were enough options. There were at least two or three stages where they had like bonus targets
okay.
that were like, interesting to kind of make you think. And again, like they're good options. So for instance, one of them was you had two swingers kind of coming inboard at each other.
Okay.
And the one on the left was two paper, and the one on the right was a bonus steal that was worth 15 points. So that's some like math to do beforehand, right? Think about, you know, what that's worth. One of the stages that was done for the shoot off, you could have gone, you know, left or right in the beginning and then like run it like that. And me and Nelson were like watching all the guys go a certain direction and like, why are they going that way? And like we couldn't figure out why everyone thought going, you know, in that direction was the right way. So there definitely was a lot of choose your own adventure within the stages there.
Okay. Yeah, that's good to hear. It's usually indicative of a well-run match or a well-planned match. I want to talk real quick about the K-Zone. So for those of you that haven't seen a PCSL target and haven't shot the format, there is a head box. And if you get one shot in that head box, it counts as two alpha. And usually what I've seen so far in some stage designs is in practical division, you can only have, 30 rounds in your mag, right? So instead of just blasting two at every target, there's enough targets to where you're incentivized to go for the headshot at least once or twice. So is that something that they mess around with in the target presentation? And you already talked about some high risk, high reward moments with the choice between the bonus target and the swingers. But how did the K zone factor in to this match?
Yeah, I think the K zone and overall, like the way that they basically took the A and made it from the head down to like the upper chest area, like in one continuous area, definitely changes the way you engage the targets. And for me, the K zone changed it in that they have some like very close targets that are, you know, on the ground and looking up at you. If you can accurately shoot and then recognize that you shot what you thought you shot, you can go one round on each target instead of 2-2-2-2, and you're just saving time there. I think it plays in as well when you're shooting practical pistol, because say they have a stage that has 29 rounds for pistol and you only have 21 in your gun. Well, now I go shoot a bunch of K zones and I'm either putting that reload off further or I'm avoiding a reload entirely. So I think the K zone helps with shooting faster if you can call your shot correctly. The K zone also helps because you can kind of bias a little bit higher on that silhouette. You know, and hey, you throw one high. Well, now it's in a K zone. So you have one K and a mic. Well, that's two alpha. And you're good, right? So high risk, high reward at distance there.
Okay. And then I saw a little bit on the on some of the stage videos, but were there a lot of opportunities to like shoot on the move?
I think so. I saw a lot of guys kind of do like the shoot, run thing. Yeah. But I think that you definitely could have blended positions pretty well. I always try and do it. I think that's like a USPSA thing. That's what Nelson told me. I think he's right. The safe choice was probably to like stand and shoot. But I'll say this too. Like I saw a lot of less than like stellar rifle shooting. So, you know, like guys are taking five shots at a target. Like, you're taking five shots because you're
not comfortable.
You're not comfortable. Like you're all over. Whereas if you were a little more controlled, you had some better connection to the rifle, you could have probably done, you know, two moving. Granted, you probably would have had like 0.3 splits, right? But 2.3 splits is 0.6 as opposed to
five shots.
Five shots, right? It's just, again, it's just some math there. I think I definitely tried to do a lot more moving while shooting with the pistol as well. It just made sense to me. But if you had never shot while moving with the pistol or rifle, you probably could have done okay at this match. You could have found enough positions to kind of post up, shoot, and then move.
Yeah, I would still say that posting up and shooting is viable. I mean, having watched super squads shoot at nationals on the USPSA side, there's some guys who, like, specifically, unless it's a gimme, like right in their face, they're really not going to shoot on the move. Maybe as an entrance or exit, but like somebody like Max Michelle is really good at just getting into position and just like blasting all the targets. And he still shoots really fast. You mentioned a little bit about like the math side of it. And this was, you know, PCSL two gun is a hit factor format. And I was looking at stage scores. And as a result of it being two gun, you know, some of the larger round counts that I saw per stage were around 60. So like I'm looking at stage 10, round count 60, total of 300 possible points. And the fastest time was just under 60 seconds. It was at 59 seconds, right? So overall, it looked like all the hit factors were around the 4 to 5 range for most of the competition, but there still was a decent amount of disparity between the top shooter and like the second place on that stage. So there's maybe like a 8% disparity and you can still put up like a 20, 30 point lead. So having shot a lot of USPSA matches and seeing the way that hit factor usually works at the USPSA level, how did you think that hit factor worked in this two-gun format?
Yeah, I like hit factor a lot. I think it's a really good way to, you know, accurately assess, you know, one's marksmanship ability and balancing speed and accuracy, because it is an equation. You know, looking at stage 10, right, that was 300 points total, right? And I think that was the most points for a stage in the whole match. And a low hit factor is to be expected there. But you could definitely turn and burn on that stage. That was the natural terrain stage. So, you know, I finished that and, you know, I didn't throw up at the end, but I definitely was a little bit gassed. I think that on some of those larger stages in particular, you're really seeing guys pull away from the pack because they can transition better. And I don't mean like between targets, like between this box and then running to another box, or, you know, back at stage 10, for example, you know, you run into the next box. Now you've got to engage four close paper targets and then get into the VTAC barricade and then shoot 200 meters on steel. Two very, very different types of shooting. If you can seamlessly go back and forth between those two, you're really setting some distance between you and the next shooter. So I did like that kind of construct a lot.
Okay, and then I was looking at some of the I guess the classifier stages, and it seems like they did throw some quicker shooting sometimes that were like in the 10-second range. Do you feel like they struck a good blend between speed shooting and longer field courses? Is that like the ideal, I guess, blend of different lengths of stages that you would like to see at a nationals?
Yeah, I think so. I think that if you go into the match book, they broke down per stage which ones had how many targets beyond 50 yards. I think if you're going to have a two gun sport, and you're going to say that max distance for rifle is 200 and an 8 minute target, like you got to have some of that stuff in there. You got to have stuff in between 25 and 200. If you don't do that, you're not accurately portraying what you're trying to get out of the sport, and you're not, I would argue, you're not doing what people want to get out of that competition, right? Like people want to shoot their ARs like ARs. They don't want to just shoot PCC with a 223.
Okay. And we talked a little about this, but in terms of in terms of the different types of stages, I think what I was more getting at was in terms of not so much distance, but the length of stage and the availability of targets. Like for example, you shot Area 8, and they had some really long 32 round field courses, but they also had some like really, really fast stages. What did you think of like time length, just balance that they gave you guys at PCSL?
Yeah, I thought it was pretty well balanced. And I think like the field course versus the classifier kind of verbiage is pretty good. Again, I think you need to have both. I think the balance was good at the PCSL match. And I think that, I know Matt doesn't like having classifier type stages at championships, but I do think that there is some benefit. This is gonna be high hit factor. Low time, like you really can't mess up. You can't misstep. You can't take a makeup shot. Like having that kind of consequence is something that's very difficult to do outside of making a tight, fast stage.
Yeah, fair enough. I like speed shoots, but also, right, there's such a thin margin. If you mess one thing up and the whole thing just unravels, and at that point you're just trying to triage and save what you can.
I think it needs to be balanced in points. Like, if it's perfectly balanced in points to where it's not going to wreck a match, I think you're good. Like, and we saw this, I wasn't there, but I've talked to plenty of people at Multi-Gun Nats. The last four stages on the last day, it was such high value stages. People dropped considerably just by missing a target. So I think the points balance needs to be looked at whenever you do that. So if you drop one or two places, okay, I understand that. But whenever you're dropping like 5, 10, 13 places, that's where it becomes a problem.
I agree with that. But that's inherently built into hit factor as well, is the number of points available on a certain stage are going to dictate the how big of a portion of the points available throughout the match are going to be dedicated to that stage. We did talk a little bit before this, Joe, about time plus scoring. And is that, I mean, having shot this format, do you think that would be a valid, do you think that would have been a valid scoring system? Because there are parts of PCSL that use time plus.
Yeah, I think a 10 stage championship match, we had no issues with time. So I don't really see any reason to go to time plus or to anywhere kind of scoring. I think the hit factor really does separate people's shooting ability. I know someone's probably gonna be offended by that, but that's okay. It's a more precise way of measuring what people are doing. It's not overly burdensome, so I don't see a reason to do that. I think hit factor is a good way to do it.
Yeah, I do like the expedited scoring process in Time Plus. Like, it does do away with a lot of, I guess, the overlays and some of the other issues you run into in USPSA or PCSL. This was the inaugural like PCSL championship, right? How did they run that prize table out there at the match? Not that prize tables are the reason that anyone goes to a match, but they definitely help. And then would you say that there was a fair amount of like sponsorship or industry support?
Yeah, I think the prize table stuff was all randomized. So I'm not lucky, so I didn't get anything, which is
Oh
great.
no.
Yeah, no, it's okay. I've never been lucky like that. That's fine, I'll survive. I think there was some pretty good sponsorship. I think the facility is so big, it's hard to realize how much sponsorship is going on because there's like 15 bays and don't list so many banners. But I mean, I think Taryn gave away a whole PCC. I mean, Super Bowl gave away 1,000 rounds of 223. I mean, there was a lot of really good prizes in that off that prize table. I know there's a supplement company that provided like drinks and stuff at every bay. That's pretty awesome. Before the match, you could have ordered t-shirts, hats, shaker ball, stuff like that. And that was great. You show up and pick that stuff up. I will say that, having Supervel be like the title match ammo sponsor, what we're going to call it, that was super convenient, especially for someone that flew in. Because I flew in, drove to the range, checked in, and they handed me a box of ammo with my name on it. I mean, you couldn't ask for a better deal than that. So that alone, just having a ammo supplier tied to the match, that all I had to do was follow the link and order ammo, like that made it for me as far as sponsorship goes.
Yeah, very cool. I've been in the position to take advantage of that once or twice, and yeah, it's a huge benefit not having to worry about ammunition when you're flying. So you went pretty hard like over this year. You shot a lot in this local region, but you also branched out. I know you went to a one gun championship, but I think it was in South Carolina, and then you flew all the way out for this one. What do you see for yourself in the future in terms of competitions? I know you're settling into a new job, but I mean, you also love training and you love competing, so I don't see this slowing down for you anytime soon.
Before he answers, last night me and Joe were talking, just texting back and forth, and I sent him a calendar. Well, before I sent him a calendar, I was like, "Hey, you want to go shoot this match? Dude, I'd love to. I'm working." "Well, how about this one? Dude, I'm working. I can't make that." "Well, what about this one? I think I could go to that one." "Well, how about this one? Nope, I'm working."
That's true. That's pretty accurate. I do have a lot of weekends that I already know I'm working. The ones that I'm not, though, I'm seeing that there's a lot more quantified performance going on the East Coast. I'm going to swing by a few of those. I think there's two, but Peacemaker now. So I'm going to shoot those. I think there's one in March. Then in February, closer to the boat, I think RPGI is holding like an international USPSA match or something down in Florida.
Oh,
So
you're going to that.
I'm going to that. Yeah. My
Nice.
buddy Matt is local to the area, so we're going to shoot that together. And because that is international, I need to shoot a 1911 and 45 because that is a pistol. So I'm the only person shooting single stack in this match, which is fine. Like I will fly the flag on behalf of the entire nation.
Nice.
And then, of course, because that's just in my blood now, I'm also looking at heading out to shoot Western States Single Stack Classic the weekend after that. So that's kind of my February. January is going to be just destroying my tendons with 45 ACP. But that's okay. That's a fun challenge, I think.
Yeah. So, okay. That's pretty awesome that you're dedicating the amount of time and energy into shooting single stack 45. Yeah, there's not a whole lot of people, and that Western States match should be, 'cause that's basically like single stack nationals, right? Like, there's so many so many aficionados and like good competitors going out to that one.
Yeah, it should be pretty cool. I mean, I think it was like maybe already 200 people in that match. It's all people that like to shoot, you know, John Moses Browning's finest creation. So
Hell yeah, brother. But yeah, we've talked about a lot about this match, but anything else that you want to leave the listeners with about PCSL?
yeah, I think PCSL, it's a great format. The target tree is awesome. In the rule set, the targets, it's all open source now. So I see a lot of people who want to shoot one, and the fact that it is still open source, it makes it very accessible. And I think that, you know, match directors, local ranges should really take advantage of that. You know, host that PCSL match, get some guys out there doing some good competition, and then let it grow from there.
Yeah, that's awesome. If you're in the Quantico area, or hell, if you're on the East Coast, we are going to be running PCSL in January and then every other month. So January and then March and then May. Alex and I are looking at actually hosting a service rifle oriented, like one gun major match, like a really big match. Alex wants to swing for the fences. So we're still in the planning for that. But just look out for that. We love running PCSL out at Quantico. It's a really good time, and it gets an entirely new group of people out, which I really enjoy. But yeah, hope you all enjoyed. If you have any questions about the match, hit up Joe. He's always posting training stuff on his Instagram. And then hit up one of us if you have any other questions, just about the format, how to find some matches. And we hope you enjoyed this episode.